Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Tim Seymour, Steve Grasso, and Guy Adami tonight on Fast. Check out shares of Nike getting knocked down after its earnings report. The company call kicking off right now. We will bring you the very latest. Plus, Levi Strauss wowing Wall Street as it makes its public debut. That stock soaring more than 30%. We'll tell you what the jean dream means for the other unicorns waiting in the wings. But we start off with the market rally. The Dow, S&P, and Nasdaq all up 1% today as a 10-year yield hits its lowest level since January 2018. But there is one group of stocks getting absolutely turbocharged, and that would be tech. The sector soared more than 2%, just within striking distance of an all-time high, just less than 3% away. And now 30% from the December lows. The semis getting going absolutely wild. Check out Western Digital, Micron, NVIDIA. Apple also getting a huge boost, closing the day higher by 4%. So as yields come under pressure, is that growth trade back on? Can tech take us back to new highs, Guy?
Well, it's clear people are going to reach. And then fundamentally, a lot of these stories absolutely make sense. Pete can speak to Apple. You know, Steve's talked about Amazon. I happen to think there's some names, though, that we don't talk about all that much that got throttled last year on the back of this China trade deal. For example, look at Lam Research. Now, we don't talk about it often, but that stock basically got cut in half from the time that Trump spoke about this to December 24th low. Now it's starting to crawl its way back. In valuation, well, trades about the third of a valuation of like a Xilinx, for example, and with better earnings growth. So if you're looking for names that can accelerate to the upside on the back of this tech wave, I would look at like a Lam Research here at these levels.
Is this tech wave here to stay?
I think the tech wave will have a lot more. I shouldn't say a lot more. I think we can get a little more gas or a little more juice from the technology companies. You know, we've been wrong about where this market's toppy, and I think you have a little more. Maybe you're in the eighth inning.
Thanks,
you have
to
another
Powell.
Inning, thanks to Powell.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, Mr. Roboto is not some of Stick's best work.
This is not about highlighting Stick's best work. It's about Mr. Roboto.
Well,
and the
but
tech
Mr.
Trade.
Roboto is the tech trader.
Right.
You know, I get the,
robots,
what we're doing there.
Tech.
So semis up 3.5% today. Extraordinary move, and maybe brought up by some of the most beaten up. But again, this comes after a move of 36% off the bottom. Look, if you remember what the market was like when we had very little growth expectation, we had yields getting somewhere either really well below 250, but certainly even in the year early part of 2018 when we were between 225. And 250. What was outperforming? Mega cap tech. Mega cap tech makes sense in this environment because these are companies that also have an enormous amount of growth relative to their peers and in some sense can turn it on and off. So, yes, I agree. Despite Mr. Roboto, I would want to be in mega cap tech here.
I continue to like the names as well. I mean, Apple's one of those names that absolutely has been on fire. I mean, this is a stock that was trading 142 at the beginning of the year. Here it is pushing towards 200, Mel. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And it seems like every week we hear from somebody else who's changing their tune in terms of either they're raising the price target or they're actually upgrading the stock itself. But today, Apple, again, had multiple different sources out there that coming out there, analysts raising those prices once again and focusing on exactly what they should be, in my opinion, services, wearables. That's the place to go. They know that the iPhone is slowing, but you got to look for where is the growth in these transitional stocks. Uh-huh. Look at Microsoft today. Satya Nadella now has been there 5 years. That stock was about $38 a share when he took over. He transitioned that company into something that they weren't. They were a little bit smaller, obviously, down there when you talk about where they were with cloud. But look at what he's done and the acquisitions. So he has spent money to get exactly where they want to be, and he's done an unbelievable job. And then you look over at the semis. I mean, when I look at Micron, we all looked at that report last night. We thought it was maybe modestly okay. Some of the guidance was pretty awful.
Does that make you nervous?
Well, I think it doesn't, because here's why. When you have a report like they gave, And the stock reaction is, right. Hey, look, we want in because maybe it's troughing and we think the opportunity is still to the upside. The multiple's still incredibly low, right? So, but if you look at Qorvo got an upgrade today and you go through those semis, they were absolutely on fire today. Xilinx, all these various names are screaming to the upside, and I think it's technology semis you can be in.
Is the question, if I may, is the question with an Apple, when you started off your statements with Apple, is there a reason for Apple to go back to pre-sell-off highs? Or is this, we're finding a range for the mega cap tech?
So the concern for Apple, right, before the sell-off was about China. The concern for Apple was about that high-priced phone. Do some of these concerns, do they truly get offset by this new streaming service, which they have yet to announce on Monday, which we don't know any details about, which Needham upgraded the stock on, which Wedbush raised its price target on? I mean, Apple was a pillar of strength in this tech trade today.
For sure.
Well, is there a reason for it to be this high?
The reason is that the market sentiment has changed. And again, there's rotation into stocks where people know that the valuation makes enough sense relative to where the growth is. Look, Apple's not going to give you anything extraordinary in terms of their streaming business, and nothing has changed. Look, China, if anything, while I do believe that the data has bottomed, I don't think that the market for Apple phones in China is any different today than it was 4 months ago. I definitely don't think that their services business is going to be something that's going to suddenly excite the people that were naysayers. I'm with Pete. I agree, actually, that the services business is in a decent place. But what's going on with Apple? Totally perception. Apple tends to overshoot in each direction. We got to a place where every analyst on the street was out of this one.
But let's not forget, I agree with the analysts. They're wrong all the time. But when I look at this company, though, and you see what's going on, Mel, I mean, what did they do? Tim Cook said, hey, look, we got to cut these prices. We are too high. They did that. And suddenly things did change over in China in terms of they suddenly started to get a little bit more market share. It actually started coming up. So I think that they at least reacted.
That's my point, though, is we're back to November levels in the stock. It's above its 200-day for the first time.
So is it fairly
since November,
valued?
So is it fairly valued where we all said that maybe there's a little more juice left with these tech trades? Is this coming to the end for the tech trade, even though you have a little more juice? Is this a better time to be lightening up?
Go ahead.
I'm not sure I understand that analysis. I'll say this about Apple. I bought the stock after that sell-off, and I started to buy it on the way down. In fact, I have an average price of about $196. I'm right there right now. Guess what? I'm going to still hold the stock because the reason I was buying it then, I also don't see what has changed. And I think the perception of Apple is one of these stocks that continues to overshoot in each direction. I think the market now wants to take this thing higher, but that's not why I'm trading it.
I mean, I think it's a fair question for people who are looking at this market thinking, oh, you know, S&P 500 is about 3% away from record highs again. So if we are to go back to these record highs, where were we at that time? Was global growth concerns, were they where they are right now? Has anything resolved for us to push past those record highs at this point?
What is resolved? Well, I mean, we talk about it almost
What's
every
difference?
Night. The Fed is different. And
the
now
Fed is
every
different.
Central bank on the planet
so
has become
alone.
Extraordinary. It's very helpful, clearly. I mean, I think today's price, if you had asked me, I thought what happened today should have happened yesterday. It doesn't matter. I mean, here we are. So it is what it is. But I think the fact that every central bank has done a 180 is really interesting. I also think that the market is now saying maybe there's a runway for a U.S.-China deal. I don't think so. But if you look at some of these names, you had, for example, I mentioned Lam Research. That stock is nowhere near where it was when the trade tariff started March of last year. So if we get a deal, you could still see further upside in some of these names.
If you look back at it, so to bring this back to a macro instead of getting off of Apple, if you look at the last time the S&P paid over 18 times forward multiple, you have to go back to the dot-com bubble. You have to go back to the 2000 to 2005. I'm not sure that you want to get that someone's willing to give an 18 plus.
We're nowhere near there.
No, but at 3,000 in the S&P, we are near there. So when we're talking about 2940 at all time highs, you're a blink of an eye away from that 3,000 number in the S&P. And my point is, do you buy the market now? Have things substantively changed other than
the
Fed?
Okay, so you're the bearish one. Do you sell into this market here, seeing that there could be 100 points on the S&P upside?
What my major problem was that made me turn, I said it weeks ago, if he stopped the quantitative tightening and he takes off all future future hikes, which
all
he did.
All your dreams came true, Grasso.
They did. They did. So I'm not saying sell it here. I'm saying you have. I did say eighth inning. I'm saying right. You have up to 3,000 right. S&P. But when you think about it, why are you paying the multiples on the market that we have not seen?
Because we've paid 18 times current. For
when was
for
the last
three out of the last
I'm
5 years?
Forward, though.
So
forward, it goes back to
Steve,
2000.
Right, so what's your earnings for the S&P in 2020?
So if you say 166 times 18, there's you get your number. My point is you got to look back. You got to look back on forward multiples. And the last time we paid was
back to the analog, which was a world where we didn't have extraordinary growth and the Fed was in benign mode. We'll call it that. The market trade at a multiple that a lot of people had a challenge with. But then you get back to earnings yield versus the 10-year and you find that equity is the only place to be. The bottom line is we're at a 2%+ GDP growth environment. The U.S., I would argue, but certainly if you look at the global indicators, we saw the BDI index start to kick up a little bit. We're going to get PMIs out of Europe tomorrow. If anything, I think a lot of the European data for the short run, I'm not saying Europe's out of the woods. I'm telling you, though, with the Fed out of the picture, this is an environment where the market can rally.
But you say 2% GDP as if it's a given. I don't think it's a given. So that is the
GDP we're in right now.
If you look back, when we look back on GDP, because it's a backward-looking forecast, we're not going to be at 2%. We came from 4.2 to 3.4 to 2.6,
Where's the estimates?
Part of the Needham argument today was that cash that Apple has, right? And obviously the cash flows that they have. So, again, when you look at some of these tech names, let's go back to what we were talking about. You guys talk about valuations. How about everybody's talking about dividend, chasing for yield, all that kind of thing, right? Well, who has great yield right now? Microsoft's pretty good. Intel's not so bad. Apple, and they'll continue to buy. Big cap tech. You go across, you look at the Ciscos and Oracles of the world. They all seem to be humming along at a very nice pace. So I think there's opportunities there, and I still think there's upside in some of these names. And again, Cisco, what a great transitional company this is. Like Microsoft, like Apple, where they're moving themselves. As big as they are shifting very rapidly to a different source that's going to push them further higher.
Yeah, we're going to need the tech. We're obviously going to need technology and probably materials because banks in this environment might lag now for quite some time. But, you know, listen, I've thought the market's going to roll over for quite some time. Clearly, it's wrong. Again, today's action should have happened yesterday. It doesn't matter. But you should be concerned, if nothing else, that the VIX is at levels that historically over the last couple of years, has been concerning. And people, the complacency of early October, seems to have found its way back in the market now. I don't know. I think what's been driving the VIX is the fact that people... The Fed. That's
exactly it's the uncertainty.
Right.
It's the Fed. It's the trade war. Mm-hmm. It's all those. And there's just so many things have been thrown at this market that it's amazing, actually, that the VIX is trading where it is now compared to where it was before.
Right. Still ahead, we will have much more on this market rally and get the two stocks one top technician says are primed for a breakout. That's later. Plus, Nike sliding after its earnings report. The CEO is speaking on the company conference call right now. We will bring you the very latest. And from leggings to jeggings. Mean leggings. Investors loving Levi's. The stock soars on its public debut. Is this just a taste of what we can expect from a flood of IPOs this year? We will explain. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this.
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to McDonald's.
1 in 8, start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
Welcome back to Fast Money. It was a sea of denim on Wall Street today as Levi Strauss went public. The stock soared in its trading debut, closing up 32%. Bob Pisani's down at the NYSE with more on this. Hey, Bob.
It certainly was a day of denim, Melissa. Looked like a scene from Woodstock down here. The initial price talk for Levi Strauss, 14 to 16. Wait a minute, it priced at 17. It opened at 22.22. That's a 30% pop, and it pretty much stayed there all day. A lot of happy insiders with this one. The timing was perfect. Plenty of pent-up demand because the IPO market was closed for 4 months. A strong start to the year for stocks, up 12% with the S&P. You got an iconic brand, and you have most people considered a reasonable valuation. The CEO insists, in fact, their valuation was justifiable.
I believe this is sustainable for the long term, maybe not double digits forever, but we've got clear runway for growth across the categories that we're competing in. We're building share in our core categories and expanding to new categories. Last fiscal year, when we finished the year, our growth was really broad-based. If you looked at it in the categories where we competed, we grew every single category.
Demand's been strong. In fact, it was strong all day. Now, a good rule of thumb is if you trade 100% of the volume on the first day, that's an indication of strong demand. We did it. We ended with more than 120% of the volume. Don't expect this to happen with everybody else. There's a ton of stuff out there. 234 potential IPOs with a whopping $700 billion valuation. They could seek to raise upwards of $100 billion a year. That's the magic number, of course, because the old record was $96 billion in 2000. So who's going to buy all this stuff? And will there be a revolt when they put the prices too high? They're going to do that. You know that. Stay tuned. Waiting in the wings, you know them. Uber, WeWork, Palantir, Airbnb, Pinterest, Robinhood, Peloton. And after this debut, Melissa, you can bet they're all going to be looking to push their valuations a lot higher. In fact, remember, Lyft, last funding round, $15 billion. Reports they're going to try to go for 22 or 23. That's what I'm talking about. Back to you.
Is that a denim suit, Bob?
I left the denim home today. It was nice to see some people down here, but it looked like the whole floor was going to join a jug band in 1969 at one point. It was cute. It was cute, you know. You guys know what I'm talking about.
You're always very dapper, Bob. Thank you. Bob Bassani at the New York Stock Exchange. So let's first talk about the IPO itself. Oh, Grosso, look at you.
Fonzie. I mean, Steve.
I tell you, it's very comfortable on this desk with this denim. You guys should get, like, CNBC Fast Money.
I like how you pop the collar.
Does the collar come up like that, or do you do that yourself?
You have to wear it. It looks way too cheesy wearing a flat collar with a
Hold on a second.
This looks cool.
I feel like
I might look too good with this.
You do actually look very handsome.
Right, said Steve.
It's really.
Anyway,
really
back to Levi. Does anybody want to comment about this stock?
Well, if you're looking for a denim, well, first of all, in the United States, you've seen denim on the upswing incrementally, a smidge up, and you've seen it globally a smidge down. So net neutral basically on denim, but Levi's is your denim play. It's the most direct denim play. But if you go to an Abercrombie or an American Eagle, they're 30 to 40% denim. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for a resurgence in denim, you could play it those three ways. It's too early to be shorting Lululemon in the athleisure space. Based on a comeback of denim.
The only person on this desk that's qualified to make fashion statements about anything is probably Guy.
Yeah, I mean, look
so
at him.
Is
look
denim the new athleisure? Is it the new something that, you know, now
Does
this is enough to warrant?
Can't it be just denim? Because everybody wears denim.
You're wearing denim too, Ashley.
Oh, sorry.
Those are Wranglers.
Don't tell anybody. They're Garanimals. Guy's wearing plain pockets, no? I mean, the...
Listen,
poor guy's doing nothing.
The fact that I wear Levi's is an indictment on the company. It's you don't want me to be your target audience, number one. Number two, do you know who's a big fan of the show? S.E. Hinton. You know what she wrote? You know. He looks like Ponyboy or Two-Bit from the movie, right? It's
None
fantastic.
None of this is good.
No,
None
it's a compliment.
You know, the one
you.
Area that there is Thank some growth, you. And we heard this throughout the day, but I think it's very important. It's just like when we hear from Nike, when we hear from Lulu and everybody else. What are some of the other areas? What are the other verticals? Women, that's one of the areas for sure. And I think that's an area that obviously, it's not quite as penetrated right now, but potentially I think that's where it really could go because that could be a growth driver, I think, going forward for Levi.
There's also sort of a casualization of the American workplace. I mean, we saw Goldman Sachs go business
like
casual.
Like me wearing jeans on Fast Money.
Things are moving in that direction away from some of the more formal.
You don't do that.
I don't do that either. No, you guys are.
I don't know if they're getting the lead.
I'm not a jeans guy at work, man.
Come
it's just
on.
Not the way it is. I feel like
I see you wear shorts here.
Shorts, yes. Absolutely shorts.
A lot of righteousness about.
Not when he's on the hook though, because you can see his legs.
On the hook, then it shows.
For more on Levi's big public debut, head on over to CNBC.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
As the rate route continues, the traders are going yield hunting with a number of stocks sporting hefty dividends. Plus, CVS is getting in on the cannabis craze.
You're gonna sell weed, yo?
Not quite, but they will be selling CBD. We'll tell you what it means for the pop trade. Much more Fast Money right after this.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. The 10-year yield sinking to its lowest level in more than a year today after Fed Chair Jerome Powell suggested there would be no more hikes this year. Dom Chu's in the newsroom with more on the rate route. Dom.
Well, government bonds, they are a booming, Melissa. The 10-year note yield hovering right around that 2.5% level. That's the lowest level, by the way, in more than a year. Traders and investors have been bidding up prices for government debt by so much that yields not just here, but also abroad, are at these medium to longer term lows as well. As low as the 10-year Treasury note yields are here, they are nothing compared to the next to nothing that you earn on 10-year German Bunds. The yield there is 4 basis points. 4 basis points, just 0.004%. Shorter maturities are negative yielding there. The 10-year Japanese government bond, or JGBs, are yielding negative 4 basis points. It's leading some investors to take another look at yield hunting on the stock side of things. The dividend yield on the overall S&P 500 is roughly 1.9% or thereabouts. But there are stocks that have now dropped in price to a point where those yields are a little bit more juicy, like Ford Motor with a 7% yield. The same with telecom and media giant AT&T. That's 7% there as well. Macy's is yielding 6%, and IBM has been on a near-term uptrend, but it still yields a better-than-market 4%. Now, of course, the big question, Melissa, is how healthy and safe those dividend yields are, but they could be a place to find some bigger income checks than government bonds if you want to take on that risk. Back over to you guys.
All right, Dom, thanks. Dom Chu, back in the newsroom. Well, given this rate rut, we thought it would be a good time to go yield hunting.
Oh, we love
now,
this game.
Now, listen up, because you guys get confused sometimes. Here's how it works. We'll use a name like IBM with a dividend yield of 4%. So if you're buying the name, you'll see that green target, meaning you are hunting the stock. You like it. If you'd rather let it fly away, meaning you don't like the stock, you'll see a red duck. Red meaning no, the duck will be taking off. Easy, straightforward. Got it?
Probably not.
Huh.
Probably not. Guy, you're up first. Oh,
well, see, that's not fair.
Why?
That's like when you're in class.
No, but I figured the explanation is
right.
Fresh in your mind.
Okay, fresh in my
mind. And we're going to use IBM, which is the exact stock I used in the example. IBM.
So you actually gave me the test before
yes,
the actual test.
So that
test.
You can think about it. Okay, now, what do you say? Do you hunt it or do you let it fly? Ooh.
The duck flies away with this one. I mean, fly away, put the little red duck on. I mean, this is now in a 5-year downtrend. Now, the people that are optimistic will say, you know what, last quarter in January was pretty good. They actually beat on revenue, beat on EPS. Maybe they've turned it around. But you're still in a 5-year downtrend. You have no earnings growth. And I think people are pointing towards maybe they are going to be the name in blockchain, the way Microsoft became one of the huge names in cloud. Maybe IBM can turn it around. I don't think they can.
I think
fly
they can,
away.
And here's why. The one pushback I'd have, and I own IBM, but
you like it.
I do like it.
So hunting it.
I would be
hunting.
Yeah, I'd be hunting this thing. Yeah, I got to hunt. Look at that. It's right there. So the reason I like it, though, Guy, is Red Hat.
Right.
I think of all the acquisitions, they've made mistakes all along the way for a long, long time, IBM. We know that they're an acquisition. That's exactly what they do. But I think this one's big. I think it's a monster. And they are positioning themselves now going forward. So because of that, I actually disagree with that. And usually I'm together with you. but not this time.
All right. Okay. Hmm. The next stock here, Ford. Steve Grasso.
I would hunt this one.
Ooh. Huh?
Nice. Strong out of the gate.
It's already up 13% year to date. I like it technically. I think it's constructive. And I also think that they're restructuring in Europe. They're quasi-restructuring here. I think the somewhat of the worst is over for Ford.
I like autos, as you know, but as you also know, I like GM, and I let this one fly. I know how to play this game.
I look at
relative valuation. I look at the management team. I mean, the C-suite at GM is far superior. Most importantly, I actually think Ford has still some credit issues in there, so I let her fly.
Mm. All right. We're going to move on to this next stock. Mm-hmm. AT&T, it's got a fat dividend. Ooh. 7%.
That's
Pete Najarian. What do you say?
I am hunting this son of a gun. And I'll tell you what.
No, wait a second. You're not.
Wait, no, I'm not hunting it. I'm flying away.
See, he messed it up.
You totally
flying away. Yeah, I screwed it up.
You do not like
No,
AT&T.
I'm not a big fan. And I'll tell you what.
Okay.
I know they've made some huge acquisitions, right? But these massive acquisitions give them a position now of their debt's like $180 billion.
It's going to get better, Pete.
They got $5 billion in cash. That's great.
It's going to get better, and streaming's coming on.
Right.
There's a whole host of
reasons. And nobody's competing in that. But anyway, my reasoning behind that is I just think they are way too levered because of that, and so I'm not into it.
So look, in an environment where basically money is free, isn't this great news for AT&T? Oh, and by the way, they pay almost 7%. I hunt this bad boy because I also think that the sum of the parts in this thing finally can be measured. The deal is through. They, to me, also are making a major move in over the top. I love this.
It's been hunting
streaming
forever,
is better.
I got to tell you something. Everybody goes there. And you know what? When you lose 7% in the stock, how's that dividend looking?
Zero.
Not so good.
We had a lot of headwinds that seem to be clearing right now. I'm hunting it. I never said it officially. I'm hunting it.
All right.
I like the little scope thing, though.
You do?
That's the
He's hunting.
No, I'm not sure what
Pete's not sure what it means.
To me, it means like
a
submarine. Like you put the periscope up.
It's
maybe the game
that.
Should
That's
be called
mixed
like.
Metaphor. No, we're not renaming the game. It's taken this long for you guys to understand the basic concepts.
We
are not moving on from this. Last but not least, this is the last stock here. Macy's, Tim.
Yeah, I'm going to hunt this one, and both to be consistent and also because I look at not this thing because of the yield. I think that's a gift for staying in a stock that clearly has some margin pressure, but also does not have the balance sheet issues that people saw. In fact, look at their debt. Their debt actually has been trading tighter. I like Macy's as a turnaround story that's taking a long time.
You know what? What I was thinking was, seriously, we could change it to if we called the game like the hunt for Red October.
Yes.
And, right? And then you could have... Sean Connery could be one of the guys, right? And Pete and I could actually portray the whole thing.
And you could say, I give that chance to be one and
Tim could be Alec Baldwin.
This is really a non sequitur.
Could I say that line of his in The Untouchables?
I would hunt Macy's. I would hunt Macy's as well.
So, you like Macy's.
So put the little green sucker up there. And I'd say, look, yes, I do like Macy's. If you look valuation compelling, maybe they've turned the boat around. The stock's gotten beat up, so it's worth a hunt here.
It's exasperating playing this game with you guys.
Pardon me?
Exasperating.
Yeah. Oh, I thought this was
our next guest has two of his own high dividend stocks that he thinks are heading for a breakout. More on the markets as well as the stocks that go off the charts with Rob Slimer of FundStrat. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Melissa. So let's start with the S&P. We'll look at the 10-year bond yield, and then we'll look at a couple of ideas. So if we start with the S&P, and we look at this indicator in the bottom panel, it's a proprietary indicator we have, and it tracks the percentage of stocks with rising weekly momentum. So how many stocks are moving up on a weekly chart? And if we go back to 2016, because we still think that's an analogy, when that indicator got above 90%, it's a relatively rare reading. It tends to happen around major cycle lows, so we'll call that a good overbought. Market is still early on a bull cycle, but it's heading for a pause. In fact, if we look at what happened as we came off those levels at the end of the first quarter of 2016 into the beginning of the second quarter, we really went sideways for 2, 3, 4 months. So we think that there's a similar setup developing here. Coming into the end of last week, it was at 92%. The market's getting a little bit extended, at least from a tactical standpoint. We're still bullish long-term. We want to be buying any sort of pause in accumulation or distribution that develops over the next couple of months. But we think we're heading for a pause. So this data looks very similar to 2016. We think as we move into the second quarter, as a lot of these stocks get superheated, growth stocks, semiconductors and whatnot, we're going to be wanting to get a little bit more into defensive names, just as a tactical multi-month trade. So let's take a look at the 10-year bond yield. It's obviously come down a long way. There's two things here. One is this momentum indicator in the bottom panel, just a simple RSI looking at a 14-week. It's starting to get oversold. And while this chart here, this line at the top, is the downtrend that comes all the way, that goes all the way back to the beginning of the 1980 highs, and that's where the market stalled in 2007. and that's where the market stalled in the end of 2018. So what do we do here? It's a little bit tough to see, but in this band here between, call it 250 and 2%, sort of in the middle of that band, 2.25 to 250, we don't think there's tremendous amount of downside in bond yields, particularly given this momentum indicator, this weekly indicator that tends to track multi-week moves, is getting oversold. So while the equity market's red hot, we've got, again, growth stocks working, we've got semis working, what do you do? I'm going to come back to a name we've talked about before, because I think as you go into the second quarter, these names that have been pushed down, that have been avoided as the growth stocks have rallied, are going to be pretty timely. And I just think that Pfizer coming right back to the 200-day as we get into the second quarter is going to be a timely place to be. It's lagged considerably, so if we're going to get any rotation as we get to the end of the quarter, I think that's one name to take a look at. And then Verizon is sort of a controversial name. But again, it's just coming off that 200-week moving average or 200-day moving average, and that relative strength is starting to firm. You got a 4% dividend on Verizon. You got a 3.4% dividend on Pfizer. I think those are great names for a few months in the second quarter.
All right, Rob, why don't you come on over?
Bring him
Sweet.
In. Shoot
Evan,
him, right?
Evan will bring the chair.
Why?
Because if you shoot, that's the good
that's
thing.
That's right.
You're hunting
right.
him.
You're hunting him.
Thank you, Evan.
Shoot him.
All right.
You'd be great for that team.
Before we get more into some of your dividend stocks, Rob, I want to go back to the chart of the 10-year yield where you showed the RSI and you showed that it was looking oversold. Does
yes.
that imply that you think yields are going to go higher? And would the growth trade in your mind be in jeopardy if rates do go higher?
I think that there's going to be a lot of churn as we get into the second quarter. Mm-hmm. Yields have been falling. The market's been going higher. I think that weekly data suggests yields aren't going meaningfully lower. I don't think we're going to have rates going down below 2%. That's my view based on what I see on the chart. And then we get into this churn period. As that starts to happen, I think a lot of the growth stocks are due for a pause. They've just run a long way. If you look at software names, Adobe we saw last week begin to churn around. We saw Nike today after hours. A name like Keys, for example, a 5G play, has just been red hot and screaming. Those stocks, I think, are going to get set for a pause, some sort of pullback. There's risk for some earnings disappointment going into the second quarter.
So does that mean that you think the S&P 500 won't recapture its previous record?
I think it's going to churn for a couple of months before it accelerates at the end, in the second half of the year.
Yeah, so Robert, if you look at the Treasury yield curve and you look at the parts that actually have not moved as much, do you think that there's some sense that the yield curve could actually strengthen again if the Fed comes back into play? But back to what does that mean for the overall market? Would that change your view on anything here?
My guess is the curve, it's going to take some time before it starts steepening again. I'm sort of speculating. We don't have any evidence of that mm-hmm. technically yet. So I think as we move into the second half of the year, a lot of our concerns about the economy slowing down, earnings slowing down, that's all going to get reflected in the stocks. And the curve starts steepening. You're actually probably going to go back to more cyclical names.
Like banks.
And even the banks. But that's in the back half of the year. We still got to get through this churn period. And all the growth stocks are setting up for a little bit of pause from what I can see technically.
Now, Rob, I know that you came early to the show, so I don't know if you were listening very closely. Did you listen to the rules of the game
oh,
that
yes.
we were playing?
Oh, yes.
Okay, because we want to give you a bonus round.
Come on.
There
we go. Let's go.
Yeah, Rob Kleiber with
a
bonus round at the end of the desk. AT&T, hunt it or let it fly?
I guess if I'm going with Verizon, I got to go with AT&T, so I'm gonna hunt it.
You're gonna hunt it.
Nice. Well done.
Do the technicals line up with what you're seeing with Verizon?
You know what? It's deeply oversold. It doesn't look as good as Verizon, in my opinion. But if I have to pick those names over some of the high growth stocks for the next 2 months, I'll take AT&T.
All right. Rob, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing the game.
Playing so well, by the way.
So competently compared to some of the other people here on this desk.
Phenomenal.
Rob Slimer of Fundstrat. Pete, I'll go right back to you because Rob likes both of those. You didn't like AT&T. Would you like Verizon instead?
No, neither of them. No, okay. I just hate the leverage there. But going back to his Pfizer call, I love that one. I'm in that stock. You got a 3.4% dividend yield out of there. You're 13 times. Everything fundamentally lines up as well.
Coming up, Nike getting kicked down after its earnings report. We'll tell you what the CEO just said that's got investors running scared. Plus, CVS getting in on the cannabis craze as it partners with Curaleaf to sell CBD products. Is this the prescription for profits pot traders have been waiting for? We will explain when Fast Money returns.
As you look at, the CBD products, as it's referred to, we're going to be carrying them, in 8 states. We're going to be carrying the topical products only.
Branded by gels, CVS?
Not branded by CVS. And, Jim, anecdotally, we've heard from our customers that, have used those products that, it's helped with pain relief for arthritis and other ailments. So, we're going to walk slowly, but we think that this is something that customers are going to be looking for and is part of the health offering.
That was a sneak peek of Jim Cramer's interview with CVS Health CEO after the pharmacy giant partnered with Curaleaf to sell CBD products in some of its stores. You can catch the rest of it top of the hour on Mad Money. In the meantime, Curaleaf CEO also just appeared on the closing bell, had this to say about the CBD boom.
We are in conversations with many national retailers. Let me frame the opportunity for you. Estimates of CBD are that it will grow from $600 million this year to $22 billion in 3 years. So I can assure you every national retailer in the country is trying to figure out this space. And we are having an active dialogue with many of those retailers right now because the American people want CBD.
Both stocks moving higher today as cannabis continues to go mainstream. So is it time to make some cush cash? Buy up all these stocks.
Well, I tell you, first of all, Curaleaf has had a lot of announcements. They've had a couple acquisitions, some in Eureka, that allow their vertically integrated story to continue there. But really, Curaleaf is about building a brand and building a footprint. 800 stores. They're the first one to cut a deal with a big box retailer, puts them in 10 states in addition to all their own dispensaries. So really powerful when we all know that this is about building brands. So and they're doing it, by the way, they're getting distribution at a time. Look, the industry's having a lot of trouble raising capital. Now, there's people paying for equities, but basically capital is very expensive. This is, doing a deal with one of the biggest distributors in the world is exactly where we want to go. This is what we know CBD is going to do.
We've seen alcohol companies get involved. We've seen tobacco companies get involved. We're seeing retail operations get involved. So to your original question, I think you do have to buy a host of the main names in the cannabis space. And then the rest of them will probably in the next couple of years be absorbed because there's thousands of these companies that will make money. Uh-huh. Some of them will never make money. You got to buy the branded names.
Sure.
That you know.
It seems like this is a much more of a sure thing as opposed to the partnerships with some of the alcohol companies. I mean, it is still a challenge, for instance, to suspend THC into a drink. I mean, it's oil based. It's not an easy thing to do. So they've got to get over that. Also, the FDA hasn't yet had issued any rules when it comes to food and either CBD or food and THC for that matter. And so that's, I mean, if these guys can get into CVS now with just these lotions and topical treatments, eventually when the FDA puts out guidelines on food, et cetera, I mean, that could be a whole new market for them in a huge leg up on distribution.
Well, I'd even say that gives them the credibility, right? I mean, obviously, if they get in now and then going forward, once they've presented themselves and as long as they're living up to all the obligations they've got and everything that the FDA is going to have on top of them, it's going to be great because they are, you're always looking for the first enter. It's like Netflix, right? I mean, Netflix still has that moat. Those that can get in, I think, have that moat.
I would just say they're building a wellness kind of approach, and that's different. It's less about recreational, I would say.
Yes.
And by the way, hemp is rushing ahead of cannabis and THC in capital markets. I can just tell you there's a ton of deals coming through now.
All right, coming up. Check out shares of Nike falling after hours. We will hear from the CEO in just a few minutes about its quarter. Plus, biotech booming as the group is having its best quarter since 2013. But will one bad egg in the space sicken this rally? We've got all the details right after the break. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert. Nike hitting an after-hours session lows. Let's get to Eric Chemie back at headquarters with the latest. Eric.
That's right, Melissa. So the stock is down after hours, and CEO Mark Parker was on the conference call just a few minutes ago. When you're listening to him, though, it almost sounds like you're listening to a tech company and their earnings rather than a shoe company. He talked about their focus on innovation pipeline, their digital direct-to-consumer channels, the self-lacing shoes. Those have been a big hit, and the company's finding increased gains as they spend more money on technology. Here's what CEO Mark Parker had to say just a few minutes ago.
We're seeing the early wins pile up in our digital transformation, and it's bringing scale to every facet of our triple-double strategy. What's so exciting is the more we invest in stronger digital capabilities, the more growth opportunities we uncover.
Parker also focused on how big their growth in China is as those consumers continue to crave Nikes. It's been a much hotter area for the company relative to its domestic U.S. business. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Eric. Thank you. Eric Chemie in the newsroom. Pete, why is the stock so low?
I think just the fact that, for me, valuation's been one of the issues. And this thing's had an absolutely incredible run. I mean, we all look at it from the last earnings cycle. We had the Greater China numbers that surprised everybody, shocked them. And they continue to kill it when it comes to the absolute internet side of things as well. So are they doing everything right? Yes. Is their free cash flow great? Yes. Everything seems to check the box. The one thing is, when you look at the valuation, they do have great growth. But that valuation, when you start to push towards 27, 28, 30, that's pretty high, Mel, for what we're talking about in this category. And so I think on a pullback, I think Nike is a great opportunity.
Why is it up? Why
North American sales. I think North American sales disappointed. That's still where most of the, well, that's where the lion's share of their revenues come from. But the China numbers, two quarters in a row now, are great. And last night we said digital transformation. Did you just hear that, SOT? That's inside television stuff. And the folks saying, what's a SOT? That's sound called on sound tape. On tape.
Although
and
there's no more tape anymore.
Pardon me?
There's no tape anymore.
Well, something like that. And he said digital transformation. Inventories only grew 1%. They had 7% growth in terms of sales. I understand valuation a concern. I think it's North American sales. I think you buy the pullback.
24% FX neutral currency growth, FX or currency free growth in China, to me, is extraordinary. And so much for the pushback on American brands. Innovation at Nike is back. And I know that sounds crazy to talk about with, we talk about tech companies, but clearly that is allowing these guys to have major pricing power. And frankly, that was gone for a long time. That's why North America is picking up. I'm long the stock. It was such a big move. I don't think, you know, this just not be a surprise to see this pullback.
The original reason why Nike spiked higher was because it was recovering in North America sales way back on the chart. And if you look at it now, to Guy's point, I think that's the reason why it's showing a lot of headwinds. Oddly enough, though, Under Armour, which no one gets really bulled up about, has outperformed even into this print and now is grossly outperforming Nike. So keep a look at Under Armour because that chart looks like it's rolling over as well. But if that stabilizes, could be an interesting play here.
All right. Coming up, Biogen having its worst day in almost 15 years after pulling the plug on one of its highly anticipated Alzheimer's drugs. We'll tell you how much worse could get when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Biogen, a major buzzkill today as that stock fell nearly 30% for its worst session in nearly 15 years. The stock cratering after the company pulled the plug on its highly anticipated Alzheimer's drug. The move sending the IBB ETF that tracks the space sinking today, although it is still on track for its best quarter since 2013. Is the Biogen bust just the tip of the iceberg for a bigger sell-off in the space, Grasso?
You could have that, and this is why I'm a firm believer that you have to buy the IBB. So even though that was affected because it's the third top holding within the IBB, it's better than having the binary bet on Biogen independently of owning the rest of the space. So if you don't know the space, if you can't follow it, if you're not a doctor, none of us are, and if you're an average investor and don't have any real insights on that, you buy the index, you buy the ETF versus the single stock.
The reason why I would disagree with that is because Alzheimer's is sort of the holy grail, and none of these companies have been able to figure out Alzheimer's. So, you know, that's why I think this is specific to Biogen. So I wouldn't impugn
the rest of the space.
The rest of the space.
But this sell-off, does it feel like too much? I mean, I look at it as 30% sell-off on this news.
But a whole potential franchise just got written down to zero.
The potential of that drug.
Right,
That drug, which was a big number.
And that was where there was a lot of, there was also arguably growth projections priced in as well.
But let's look at a company that still makes $23 a share before this, without this in there, and all of a sudden you're looking at trading $230, it's like, it's a 10 PE, right? I mean, it's gotten very, very inexpensive, I think. I stared at it all day, and the implied volatility of the options never rose enough.
I mean,
there was nothing there.
The other question is, could this be the next Celgene in terms of being a
target?
Does this force them to either be bought or to buy? Right?
More to buy than to be bought. I think they're more in a position to buy than to be bought, but that's an fascinating question.
I pose fascinating questions.
And it's a great question. It's a question we've been asking for the last 3 years, though, in the entire space. People have been saying we're waiting for the M&A. It's one of the things that's been keeping the mega cap biotech stocks down. It's why actually the smaller names have outperformed. What's that other ETF that has all the smaller
names? XBI.
The XBI. Thank you, Mel.
You
should actually be a trader on Fast Money. Mm-hmm. by the way, breaking 250 on the stock is a big deal, though, because if you look at the chart over the last couple of years, that was the level that actually needed to hold, and it's well through that now.
Well, despite the breakdown, options traders are betting that the Biogen bottom may be in. Brian Stutland's breaking down all the action. Hey, Bri.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I mean, basically, option activity huge today, trading 23 times normal average daily volume here. What's interesting here, to Pete's view, somewhat bullish on the stock, is calls outpaced puts, meaning 1.5 calls were traded for every put. So it seems like there were some bullish bets. The biggest area strike was the April 230 call. Now, there was a lot of small money trades here, but the bigger size trades were buyers here at about $9.30 here. So that's playing to the upside with a break even of 239.30. Anywhere above there, if you had bought a call, you'll profit. Below there, all traders were risking was at $9.30. And when you look at the chart here, that breakdown below 250 here, you have that range all the way down to 206, which is the low. 263 is sort of going to be the top end resistance here. And so that's a huge gap, $60 either way that it can move here. And that's why people are using calls rather than stock to sort of make a bullish bet. If there's some sort of acquisition down the pipeline, some sort of change of view, low PE, reasonable time to buy, traders are using calls to do that to the upside.
Pete, see this?
I did. I saw that. But I, and to Brian's point, I think the implied volatility is just not there. I mean, it's shocking to me to see a stock that pulls down 30%. I mean, we don't see that very often. And the 30% move, and yet the implied volatility doesn't jump so much that it doesn't scare people to say, you know what, I'm going to buy these calls. I was looking to sell calls today against maybe a long position. It just wasn't there.
All right, Brian, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow for the full show of Options Action, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Oh, by the way, guys,
come on!
All-star show.
Woo-hoo! Marketing your calendar. Up next, your first trade for tomorrow, final trade. It is time for the final trade today. Pete Najarian.
We started the show with tech. We talked about semis. Marvell, this thing's going higher. Giddy up.
Huh. You know, I'm going to push back on Pete, and he can't say anything about it because he's already said his piece. I'm long AT&T. I think this goes higher. Oh, he's back. The wireless business is growing. I think their Warner Media Group is underestimated. I think some of the parts, AT&T.
Steve?
Micron had a nice pop. But if you look at DRAM chart, DRAM is still going lower. And Micron just catches up or catches down with DRAM. It's going down. Micron, sell.
Do you have a jean jacket guy?
Yeah, of course I do. Cut
you
the
do?
Sleeves off.
Nice.
Badass.
You go with a jean vest?
So, no, Tim.
Did you ever wear a jean jacket? You wear a jean jacket
best
and
for
jeans?
Best your domain.
Listen, and what do you call that?
This is a mea culpa part
of the
show.
Is that a guy tuxedo?
It's a denim suit.
It's a guy
we
tuxedo.
We give Mel a hard time. She went to Harvard University, and we say, you know, bucket
Let's
shot.
Not talk about
last
that.
Night
anyway,
they beat our Georgetown
that's
boys.
That's right. That's
in
right.
In Georgetown.
God, that's embarrassing.
Lamb research.
See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Mad Money starts right now.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.